as I said, at Lilydale we were at the crossroads in 2011. We had gone from operating a very successful museum, which we'd established in 1976, through to in 1989, when we handed the museum over to and the collection to the council. And after that, we immediately had no home from 2009. So we worked lovely with, really, really well with the Shire, etc. But by 1909, they were redeveloping the museum, and it was a regional museum. We were one society, so we were out the door. So we had nowhere to go. This is a painting of a local artist did for me and hangs proudly in my place at home of our old museum in Lilydale. Oh, hang on, now it's gone crazy, hang on. But we were determined to survive, and thanks to the Eastern Regional Library Service and the Athenaeum Theatre Company, who had a nice building as well, in 2009 and 2010 we at least had a place to meet and a place to help the public with their research while we searched for a new home. The image I've just put up there now is the old Lilydale Courthouse. We secured our new home, the old Lilydale Courthouse, in 2011. And by the way, I was just talking to somebody at lunch. This was unusual in that this building was actually sold to the Shire of Yarra Ranges from the state government. It was surplus to their needs. Guess what? We had a couple of councillors who were lawyers who used to work out of this courthouse, so they managed to convince the council to spend money to buy it, and they acquired the building. However, we as a society had to sit down and determine our own future survival. For the first time in our society's 40-year history, we had to pay rent to the Shire and be completely self-sufficient. The rent started off at $1,200 a year, CPI adjusted. The courthouse here was erected in 1876 and is the oldest civic building still surviving in the Shire of Yarra Ranges. The committee spent many hours working on the MOU, and we all know what an MOU is, don't we? A memorandum of understanding. I don't know who understands what, but anyway, the Shire gets more than everybody else in most of them, I think. Anyway, we worked it out with the Shire and we started planning our future. It would be very dishonest of me to say that we were united in our approach as a society. There were some who felt it was all too hard and we should just walk away. Just stay at the Lilydale Library like we were on the weekends and help people with their research as we had done for the last 2 years. It was easy, but our society was dying through lack of members and interest. We didn't have any projects going that people could become involved in. That was our problem. Our first job at the old Lilydale Courthouse was to look at what skills we had and what resources we already had and what we were already doing. And then lastly, which is where the money comes in, and what we would need to do to utilise and or expand them in a professional way to generate income. Briefly, our resources included archives spanning back to 1971, and I must say, we don't have many objects. Everything we have, even in our collecting policy, is specified as basically paper-based or very small items. We don't have storage facilities. We have digital and bound copies of our local newspapers from 1886 to today, and I might add our local paper is not up on Trove, but that's another story. We also had 4,000 plus negatives. We had cemetery records and our own local little library collection, plus our own 40-plus publications that we've produced over the years. We also had a group of committed volunteers, some of whom, luckily, were computer literate. At that time, our activities included cemetery tours, township walks and talks, and, of course, one of our biggest focuses out there, of course, is Dame Nellie Melba. I mean, it's not often your local residents on your $100 note, is it? So we do Melba walks and talks. Our needs were all the usual stuff: filing cabinets, storage units, desks, computers, a printer scanner, and these were purchased, donated, or received via grants. I might say that our historical society has always been quite financial until I became president and started spending money. They love it when I go away because then the bank balance goes up. This is part of our negative collection. It doesn't look much, but it's vital to our society. Of all our resources, the main one is our 4,000 plus negative collection, started in 1971. This was when the society was formed, and we were formed to help the Shire, then Shire of Lilydale, celebrate its centenary. Weren't we all formed for some reason like that? The Shire wanted a book, so the society member Sandy Ross, who's our last surviving foundation member, went out and started collecting images for that book. People loaned him the original photographs, he copied them, created a negative, and so our collection was launched. Okay, some of the photos aren't the greatest, but they're better than having nothing. Throughout the years, Sandy's added to the collection by going along Lilydale's Main Street, which is our main commercial centre. It's the Maroondah Highway, everybody drives straight through and keeps going up the valley. And he went up and down the main street every 5 or 10 years photographing the shops and things, which is another valuable collection. As you can see, there are our negative envelopes. From the first negative that Sandy made, he catalogued each. He put each neg in its own envelope with its own unique number. You may say that's nothing new and it's basic looking at it from today, but bearing in mind we're talking 1971, and they hadn't even started a cataloguing system. Museums, Victoria, and none of those were in existence, so everybody was flying by the seat of their own pants, and so Sandy developed his own system. Oh, come on, it's going too fast. I hope you can see that. That's a couple of pages off Sandy's handwritten catalogue. So what he did was his number that he gave them, and whether it was a 35mm neg, we've also got not only 35mm, but we've got all sorts of, even some glass plates in our collection. This catalogue had been used for 40 years for publications, displays, etc. The process was really simple. We just selected what we wanted. Sandy would go into his dark room and do the print from a negative, and up would go the display. However, we know that's all changed now because new technology and digitisation meant the demand for consumables, namely the chemicals for your photographs, became very expensive. We decided when we moved into the old Lilydale Courthouse in 2011, our first priority was to get that negative collection digitised. And we realised from that we could then, if we had them done right, we could then look at generating income, and also, more importantly, actually seeing what all the negatives actually were that were in the collection instead of just being in envelopes. Because the collection is so precious, we decided that we wouldn't send them out to be scanned. And also, Sandy had hung on to them for so many years, and it wasn't something that he was going to support quickly. And also, the other issue is we didn't have the money to have them commercially scanned. Instead, we decided to buy our own computer and a top-end scanner and do them ourselves. That sounds good fun, doesn't it? That's a very sensitive button you've got there. Tell you, before we started scanning, we created an Excel spreadsheet of Sandy's catalogue so as we could immediately unlock it in terms of somebody rings us, we can go into that catalogue and do a search. And it's been an absolutely fantastic tool for us. We also created a copy of that catalogue into which we've given the scan numbers and the extra details. I'll perhaps just stop here and go back a little bit because we've worked with the internet and computer technology for quite a few years. I myself, as a journalist and a book publisher, have been doing digital versions of books for many, many years, so I knew a lot of the software, which was an advantage, I guess, because I'd start off with very early versions of PageMaker and went through design and Photoshop. We'd also had our first experience. Sorry, I should just mention this is our scanner. And of course, it's got a the negative frames of all different sizes and stuff as well. I'll go on to the next slide. This was our real first venture into computer technology. We got a grant from the federal government in 2000, as everybody else did, for Centenary Federation. And we developed this Melba CD education kit in conjunction with Swinburne University, based at Lilydale. So it's an interactive CD, and then there's the teacher's class notes as well. That received a commendation from the RHSV, that project. This is our latest version of our website. We've had about three different versions now. We've had several, as I said earlier, members that are computer literate, and they've proved to be a huge asset to our society since the early 1990s. However, we've formed a very special partnership with Paragram 4 and a lass by the name of Paula Favlik. And we've been working with Paula and Paragram 4, which is a not-for-profit organisation, since about 2000. And we've seen our site revamped, as I said, a couple of times, and this is the latest one. I might say here that everything that we have done and do on our website, we can change ourselves. We don't have to go back to the Paragram 4 to do the changes. We've got our own internal editor set up on that by them, and we can go in and change it daily if we want to. I've missed the slide somewhere, it doesn't matter. That's in the wrong place. These are all over the place, they haven't come up right, they're not coming up in their numbers, doesn't matter. I'm a bit like you,
yeah,
Cheryl,
well,
having a few gremlins.
Yeah.
Our first one online, I might be able to find if I scroll through, sorry about this guy. No, that slide's disappeared. Doesn't matter. Okay. Our first project that we decided to do was the suffragist project, which we put up online. We took the names of all the women from the 1891 suffragist petition and put them up online. But we didn't just put the names up online, we did their stories. And this is what's most important. Lists are fine, people want stories, and they all have stories. We considered that was an extremely important project because it's really the first time in Lilydale's history anyway, that anybody has had information on the women way back in the 1890s and who they were and what they did. Our website is proving very popular. Hang on, I'm losing my page here. That's all right. And we have about 3 to 4 inquiries, sometimes more each week. Getting back to the scanning project, which I will now. I've got to be light-fingered. We spent many hours of research to establish our own protocols. We looked at the National Library, Museum Victoria, and of course sought advice from all of those people as well, Museums Australia Victoria and other societies. But basically the comment we received if we were going to scan our images, was to scan them as large as possible depending on the space available on your computer, which is really very open-ended. So we sat down and worked out what we thought was a realistic thing and that, you know, we would have enough capacity in our computers. So each neg is now scanned at 2400 dpi and saved as a TIFF file, exactly as the original. There's no changes to it. The relevant metadata is added at that stage, which includes the caption, file name, source, copyright, are all added, along with the crucial keywords or tags. They're the key things to the collection. The TIFF file's created and saved, and then copies are made at 300 dpi TIFF and 300 dpi JPEG. Now, these new files aren't resized. They're left as the first one. Because once you start resizing them, you can't go back up. Each format is then saved in its own directory, and the only accessible file is the 300 dpi JPEG, which when someone orders it, we copy it to another directory, and it's resized then according to the client's needs. The next step, of course, was to write procedures manual from which we could train our volunteers who wanted to work on the scanning project. And as you can see, that's my limited attempt at trying to keep it simple. This one's about our third version manual, because I knew how to do it, so I was doing them. And then someone, of course, you get people in there and say, now, I want you to scan this image, and I'm going to sit here and say nothing, but you've got to follow it step by step. So I quickly highlighted the problems and the procedures, and we got up to three versions, and that's the version we now use. So it's pretty, any new volunteer that comes in and wants to do scanning, and I might add, it's very restricted who does the scanning. They've got to be trained properly, and we have two people doing it at the moment. But that's the book that they have to use. Initially, the training was slow, and the volunteers had to learn each step by step. We went from scanning one image in an hour in 2012 to six or more today. By March 2014, we had something like 350 images scanned. And as of this week, we've now scanned more than 2,200. And it's not bad for a two-person scanning team. Mind you, the two people we have, one of the gentlemen is the 55, so therefore he does his community service instead of the scheme? Yeah. Yep. And he loves scanning. He comes in and he lives for scanning, and he does it beautifully. Anyway, but he doesn't see it as a job. He loves to come in and do them because he's learning about our history. He's seeing the images, seeing the people, and he'll end up knowing more about the whole collection than what I will. We decided after, getting on and starting scanning that we'd apply for funding to showcase our images. And in 2013, we received funding from our local council for our Faces, Places and Events project. Go back, Sue. Okay. This is a couple of the panels of our Faces, Places and Events project. Perhaps I'll just walk you through this. So you hit the... Hang on. I don't know if I can show you there. See the bit up the top there marked images? That drops down and our Faces and Places comes up. That comes up. And we have a whole string of different categories here. Again, we work with Paragon 4 to develop this up. And they're just a sample of some of the categories that we've got there. And what you do is if you're interested in one, you click on it and it will bring up these images for you. So you can then click on those images and you might be able to see that there. I'm sorry, I couldn't make it. They don't go vertical, they go across. They're all watermarked. We don't put any image up online unless it's watermarked. They're all watermarked and they have a flyout for the caption as well. But that's actually taken you through to Flickr. So these images are actually uploaded on Flickr, and if you put the tag relevant to the different categories, that we have back here, that photograph will automatically come back through onto this as well. So do you understand what... Some of you mightn't understand what I'm saying. So it's not physically stored on our website. It's stored in Flickr. So people can access it through our website and through Flickr, but we want them to come through our website because we want the traffic numbers. By using Flickr, we can add as many images as we like any time to our galleries. We won't be adding all of our 4,000 plus, but we'll be adding a real cross-section of our collection as we go along. This has generated a lot of interest and, more importantly, sales. It's important because we can display our collection in a way today's internet-savvy community expect. It highlights the depth and breadth of our collection, promotes our website and other aspects of our society's activities. We also, most importantly, as I always say, what's in it for us in terms of dollars and cents? It generates sales, particularly some of our other merchandise and our publications. This project received a commendation in the Multimedia Award for the Community History Awards a couple of years ago. Another excite. So can I just say on my trip just last year when I did Melba's Black Blocks tours in the towns she went to in New South Wales and Queensland, 1909, I met up with the people at Marion, where Melba lived for some time. And you wonder why Melba's got some trains. They've still got cane trains named Nellie and Melba running around up at Marion. So the guys up there, I got caught up with the manager of the Marion Sugar Mill, because Melba and her husband and her only child, George, was born there at Marion in the little house, the manager's cottage. And this fellow found out about me after we'd left, and he got in touch with me, so he started sending me all the engines. Mind you, my husband and I had wandered around and found a couple, but we were cane train spotting for a week up there trying to find them, because we knew they were still on the line. But this gentleman sent them through to us, and now we've watermarked them, even though they're not ours, but we've watermarked them and put them up in the Melba website. So Melba's still being remembered in Marion by little cane trains trotting around. So that's why that. Did you wonder that or not?
Yeah.
You did you? Because you can't see, can you? No, they're too small. I don't know how to blow them up. There's a Nellie and a Mel, and one the first. Unfortunately, the first Nellie crashed. She went off the bridge and down the bottom. And they rebuilt her, and then changed, put another bit and put her back online. But I've always had a Nellie and a Melba running around up there, so that's pretty special, isn't it? Anyway, that's a sign. That's another day. That's the sort of image that you bring up. If you clicked on one of the other Melba images, that comes up and you can see our watermarks across it. It's a low-res image. I deliberately do them low-res, only 100 dpi. And I've had people ring me and say, look, I love your images. She said, I want to put it in my family history, but it's got a watermark all over it. What can I do? I said, you can buy an image. She said, will that have a watermark on? I said, no. Give us your $20 and you're away. And she gave me the $20, I might add. But I can give you another side of the story. Cave Hill, which was Melba's father's big operations out at Lilydale, they have, you know, closed up now and they're going to do a huge development out there. They're doing a promotional slide. Guess whose images they had up there? Ours. And they even had our watermark on them, which is great. So it promoted us. So it can work both ways. By far our most ambitious project and our most expensive one for our website, and I must say, you might think I'm getting off the subject, but I'm not, but I'm just reinforcing what you can do with your images. And everything we do, we're always thinking images, and putting the stories with those images. Right, this one is our Gun Alley project, which actually won us the RHSV's Multimedia Award, and also won us the museum, a commendation at Museums Australia, annual awards for the multimedia category. This one is an amazing little project. Gun Alley was the name of a street behind Lilydale. It was where the workers lived, the workers of Cave and the railway workers, which were the terminus town of the east at that stage. And they were the unforgotten, they were forgotten people. Nobody knew anything about them, their stories weren't recorded or anything like that. But one of our members grew up there. Now, don't ask me how Gun Alley got its name, because none of us know. But they were called the Alley Kids, and they came from Gun Alley. And what we did, I dropped it again, I'll put it down there. What our members said was, we've got to record this history, Sue, we've got to do this. So the Heritage Development Officer at the time, Megan Shee, had been doing some work down at the museum down the road, interactively, and working with a company called Mental Media up in Sydney. I was a bit worried about the name, I might add, but anyway, they're a very nice company. And we approached them and had a chat to them, and we had this idea of telling those stories in a very different way. And what we did was we applied for federal government funding, and I'm not going to name you the... It was, the, you know, the big community grants that... I can't remember the name of the department. It was Community Stories, Sharing Stories. We put in an application for $21,000. It was a total project of over $35,000, which is our in-kind contribution. And so we were successful in getting the money. So what we did is we started when this project. We went out, did the stories, got the photographs. At that stage, we had three images in our collection about Gun Alley, John Street. By the time we finished, we had over 300 images. One particular gentleman had a business down there, and he went around and he took slides of all the every time he changed his building and added a new bit. Or he got a new truck, because he was into truck towing and all sorts of things and brake repairs. And often the photograph he took would be the truck here, but over there would be a house that was that is no longer there in Lilydale. So we've got a massive collection of coloured slides from that. What we did was we told the story via a street. This is John Street here. And when you go online and click through that homepage, Gun Alley, then you can pick any one of these properties along here, which was which I drew up for them. And these are the flyers. So you click on that, and up will come the names of all the people who lived in that property from the first day through to today, and their stories. Then you can go through and onto the images. So there's as many images as we can get. And you can do that via these, or if you want to know what's happening over the years, you go across and click on the time frames, and they'll move you through to the time frames. It was $21,000, very, very well spent. And for that we won, as I said, we won the Multimedia Award from the RHSV. And the $2,000 that we got from that we put back into the redevelopment of the website that you see here today. I'm cutting short because I hope I'm not boring you. We also produced a book of the same, of the images as well. And we did videos. Images, audios. And there's one great audio on there about the SP bookmaker in town. One of the guys used to be a runner as a kid for him, and he's told that story, and people love those sorts of stories. And that's what we were trying to do. Not that their mother lived and died in this. What were their stories? And that's what we really tried to do and put up on our website. Okay, since that Gun Alley, we've added two other projects. One's our Headstones project. And I always say to my group, I have an idea, and they all go, oh. And this was to be a bit like Gun Alley, a simple project. And this was our headstones. We call it headstones. And what it involved was many years ago, Sandy had gone around and photographed all the headstones in our Lilydale Cemetery, which is now closed. We now have another cemetery down further down the road, which is the Memorial Park. So the cemetery, the old cemetery, is basically filled, except for those where they've got spots for family members. And he went around and photographed them all from 1862, when the cemetery opened, through to 1931. And we had those photos sitting there as negatives and also as prints, and we decided we should do something with them. And again, in keeping with our philosophy, as I said before, linking images with people with their stories and our archives, we decided to do this Headstones project. So it was launched. This is the sort of thing that we do, and I've only chosen a very short one to try and fit it all in. So what we did is the people's names, the image, who they are, the burial register details, as in the burial records. And I say as is, because they're not always right. And then we've got the inscription, and here we've got the links. If we've got a picture of that family, we'll have it in there, and you can click on that and go into there. And then we have the image number. So if someone wants to order it, they can quote that, and we know which one we're talking about. And then anything that we could find about those people, be it their, well, obituary is an obvious one to start with, but also we had our own files. And the funny part about this was it captivated all our members' imaginations, and we had them all working on it, which was absolutely fantastic. We developed up worksheets they had to follow and fill, and then that gave us our consistency in that project. We've had other people contact us. The best one was a guy out of the blue who emailed us from Scotland, and his family is buried at Lilydale, the descendants of, and he sent me over the copy of the family headstone over in Scotland from the generations early, which is wonderful. So that's gone into our collection. So as I said, we like to tell the stories, just not put the information up. We've got 410 headstones there, and we haven't started on the next phase, but the photography's already been started on that, but that's something for the future. Yes, five? Okay. Our latest project is the Anzac one. Again, much the same sort of procedure. We've done the service record, the places and dates of service, where they've gone, their and their family story at the bottom, both before and after. So in wrapping up, as I said, you've got to digitise to reap the rewards. Since we started digitising, in 2011 and 12, we didn't have any photo sales at all. But since then, we've generated over $2,500 of income through our digitisation program and making our images available. And that's on an average of about $500 a year in income. And that income goes back into our research and our work and further expanding our programs. So with that, I'll finish. Is there any questions or anything?